Hello, everyone out there. This is Trevor with Tee Time Reports. Thank you so much for tuning back into another UFL coverage episode. It is greatly appreciated for all the support. Make sure you guys like, comment, subscribe. Check us out on Spotify, Amazon Music, and Apple Podcasts. We cover the UFL extensively, weekly, daily, even. Make sure you check out Tee Time Reports on X as well for daily content. We pretty much are on social media every single day on X, Twitter/Twitter, Instagram, Threads, and TikTok at Tee Time Reports. All support's greatly appreciated. Today, we're going to be talking about the entire week two as a whole. The finale of week two just concluded about an hour and a half ago, maybe a little less. It was a pretty overall abysmal weekend when it came to offensive production. The best game by far was the Birmingham Stallions at Michigan Panthers game, which kicked off week two Friday, April 4th. We'll talk about the scores, the outcomes, some stats and stuff, but some news and stuff regarding the UFL. Before week two kicked off, we had Ken Wisenhunt is returning to the Memphis Showboats to resume his head coaching duties. Wisenhunt returns to the league after taking a leave of absence for week one. Jim Turner resumes his O-line duties with Ken at head coach and offensive coordinator. So definitely a good sign for Memphis to see their head coach come back. And I know he's battling some off-the-field issues right now. So, you know, prayers to him and his family, obviously. But a shout-out to Ken Wisenhunt to come back to the team and see this thing through. The Houston Roughnecks signed defensive end Tayshaun Bower. Bower is an NFL veteran, having been in the league for several years with the Minnesota Vikings, Las Vegas Raiders, and New England Patriots. He's a former LSU standout. He finds a new home in the UFL with the Houston Roughnecks prior to week two. The DC Defenders are re-signing offensive guard Liam Fortenelle. Fortenelle has been one of the DC Defenders' top O-linemen the last two seasons, earning all XFL honors in 2023. After a stint with the Patriots, Liam returns to DC. Major news for their O-line. And I think they did let someone go in the process. I don't know if I have that name on standby, but it was reported by James Larson via X. Days into broadcast every game of the 2025 United Football season in 200 markets around the globe on a free-to-air basis with the addition of the UFL to the platform. Days In to boost growth and popularity of American football, UFL Dazen's NFL and European League of Football offerings, as well as extensive portfolio of free multi-sport content. So Dazen contract for the UFL is pretty significant. We also did get a pretty significant announcement from Dave Dykeman, the UFL Director of Football Operations. He confirms expansion is likely in 2026. Quote, we will be announcing later this year a 9th and 10th team for expansion in the 2026 season. I imagine the Seattle Sea Dragons will be one of them, although people will say it doesn't really make much sense because of geographical locations and travel costs. I think that just based on pulling fans to the stands, the Seattle Sea Dragons will be one of the teams brought back, the team that will be added to the XFL conference. I would like to see either the Breakers added to the USFL conference or the Tampa Bay Bandits added to the USFL conference or even the New Jersey Generals added to the USFL conference. They have plenty of options there, a lot of history in the USFL. The Washington Federals could be an option to add that other team up in Washington State, kind of close to two teams in Washington State would be pretty cool. Getting into the weekend, obviously, like I said, the Birmingham Stallions traveled to Ford Field and took on the Michigan Panthers and won the game 21-12. The Birmingham Stallions now have an all-time record of 6-0 against the Michigan Panthers. During the game, though, there was a lot of really good play. DJ Miller Jr., cornerback number 14 for the Michigan Panthers. He's the first player in UFL history with two interceptions in a regular season game. Deion Kane had a phenomenal game for the Birmingham Stallions with 84 receiving yards, a touchdown, two kick returns with 61 return yards. They looked really good. Jace Sternberger also hit over 1,000 regular season receiving yards career-wise with the Birmingham Stallions. A really significant number to reach. Former Birmingham Stallion DeAndre Tillman signed his exclusive rights tender with the Denver Broncos. Shout out to him. During the game, Frank Ginda, a six-year veteran of spring football, records his 300th career tackle. He's been with the Michigan Panthers since the 2022 season. He also had stints in the NFL, you know, in between each season, but he has been one of the best springtime players of all time, hitting over 300 career tackles against the Stallions in that game, which is a very significant and very noteworthy benchmark and achievement to hit as a linebacker in this spring football era. It was a really good game for them. Jonathan, excuse me, I was about to say Jonathan Adams, but Yeah, no, it was a good game. It really was. It was the best game of week two, if I'm being completely honest. If you break into the box score here, Birmingham had 30 minutes of possession while Michigan had 29 minutes. Birmingham had 10 total drives. Michigan had 10 total drives. Total plays for each team was 56 each. Total yards for Birmingham was 271, while the Panthers had 252. Yards per play for Birmingham was 4.8, while it was 4.5 for the Michigan Panthers. Total red zone touchdowns, one for each team. Red zone attempts, four for the Stallions and two for the Panthers. Total yards passing, 198 for the Birmingham Stallions and 132 for the Michigan Panthers. And then getting into some individual stats, Alex Magoo did go down in play one, popped his shoulder, popped it back in. Skip Holtz said, you know, let's play it safe. I'm going to put Matt Corral in there. And Matt Corral went 18 of 29, 198 yards, 6.8 average, a touchdown, and two interceptions, and a QBR of 65. On the ground, Ricky Person Jr. had 17 attempts for 53 yards and a touchdown. Deion Kane had four catches, 84 yards, and a touchdown. Jay Sternberger, three catches for 35 yards. Marlon Williams, three catches for 32 yards. On defense, Kayvon Tizino had 10, to, excuse me, nine total tackles. Willie Yarberry had six total tackles plus a half sack. That was split with Ronnie Perkins, who had five tackles as well as a TFL. AJ Thomas had two pass deflections and an interception. He lateraled on that play, which was pretty awesome. Getting into the Michigan Panthers side of things, Danny Etling went 3 of 4 for 8 yards. Bryce Perkins went 12 of 23 for 132 yards, a touchdown, and an interception. Nate McCrary, their leading rusher, had 14 attempts, 53 yards. Matt Colburn had 8 rushes for 44 yards and did leave the game with an injury, looked like to his hand. Hopefully he'll be okay. COC Mariner was their leading receiver, 3 catches, 44 yards. Gunnar Oaks had 3 catches. Samson Nakua had a catch. Marcus Sims had 3 catches for 12 yards and a touchdown. It just overall, you saw the defensive capability that Birmingham has, and they really were just able to kind of overwhelm with pressure. They got that crucial interception on Bryce Perkins, and they just scored when they needed to, and Michigan did. But it was a really good overall game. Over 10,000 people there at Ford Field. The next game was week two, game two of week two. The Memphis Showboats traveling to DC at Audi Field to take on the DC Defenders. The Showboats lose 12 to 17, but it was a really gritty contest all around. The Showboats had the ability to win the game. The Defenders really did not look full sound. Some noteworthy things from this, I will say, Jaron Horton, the defensive coordinator for the Memphis Showboats, had his defense looking really good. Eli Walker and Lance Boykin were playing out of their minds. A bunch of pass breakups, a near crazy interception. The defensive backs were flying all over the place and really limited that DC offense. So it was a good showing for Memphis, but they just could not come away with a win. Jonathan Adams in two games now has 15 catches for 221 yards and a touchdown. So he's going off. He's one of my early season MVPs. But yeah, getting into this game statistically, when you break it down, Memphis had the time of possession of 32 minutes compared to DC's 27. Total drives, Memphis had 9, DC had 10. Total plays, Memphis had 54, DC had 59. Total yards, 297 for Memphis compared to DC's 257. It's just Memphis had two turnovers. EJ Perry went 18 of 28, 198 yards, 6.9 average, an interception. He also did have 4 rushes for 26 yards and a touchdown. Denaric Prince had 9 carries for 44 yards. Kabode had 13 carries for 33 yards, which is not good. Jonathan Adams, like I said, he had a monster game, 9 catches, 128 yards. Eli Stove had a catch for 42 yards. D. Anderson had some nice catches for 4 catches for 30 yards. Keoni Lassiter the second was pretty solid as well. They just have a suspect linebacking core, in my opinion, and they have a really solid defense, but it's just a matter of their offense does not produce enough points. Boogie Roberts had a really good game. PJ Hall had a great game for Memphis. But for the defenders, I mean, it was a different story. I mean, Jordan Tuiama was 12 of 26 with a touchdown, 152 yards. He missed wide open throws all game. It was a really rough outing for him. Abram Smith had 16 carries for 55 yards. Chris Rowland had 3 catches for 66 yards. Ty Scott, 5 catches for 59 yards. on defense. DeAndre Baker was outstanding. So was Kelvin Joseph and Joe Wallace, as well as Anthony Hines and Malik Fisher. All those guys were making plays for DC, and that's why they wound up coming away with a very gritty contest win. Game three of week two was between the Houston Roughnecks and the Arlington Renegades at Arlington. The Roughnecks lose this game 9-11. This was a very, very rough game to watch overall. 12 total drives for each team. The Renegades had the ball for 33 minutes compared to the Houston Roughnecks 26. Total yards for Houston was 225. Total yards for Arlington was 298. Anthony Brown is the problem. He was 14 of 30, 179 yards, a 6.0 average, a touchdown, and an interception. Nolan Henderson came in, but I think he should be starting, honestly. I also want to see Zaquandre White get the ball more. He had 6 carries for 16 yards, but they just never gave him prime opportunity. Anthony Brown was their leading rusher, 3 carries for 20 yards. Keke Chisholm had some nice plays. TJ Vasher had a nice play. Emmanuel Butler had a nice touchdown, but it just wasn't enough. Their defense played outstanding. Markell Roby, Leon O'Neal Jr., Damon Arnett, Marvin Moody, those guys, Corn Elder, those guys were making plays, but they just, it just, their offense is so subpar and so bad that they can't stay off the field enough. And the offense can't stay on the field at all. I think they need to start Nolan Henderson week three. And, you know, there's a really high chance Houston doesn't win a game this year. This was probably their most winnable game of the year, just based on how they played. We obviously have to see going forward. They played a really good game, the best game in 2 years they've played. So we'll see how it goes, but it just looked ugly. The Renegades, on the other hand, Luis Perez, 19 for 27, 211 yards, a touchdown, 105 QBR. Dede Hunter, 14 carries, 63 yards. Kalen Ballage, 12 carries for 38 yards. Isaiah Winstead, 7 catches for 73 yards. Deontay Burnett had 3 catches, 27 yards, and a touchdown. Sal Canella got destroyed and fumbled in this game. Donald Payne was all over the place. Jaden Price was good. Will Clark was really good. Ajean Harris was really solid. He had an interception and 2 pass deflections. I like what Arlington's been doing. They're winning games, playing full sound, complimentary football. Their defense stands tall, get turnovers, and run the ball. If it's not Kalen Ballage, it'll be Dede Hunter or Devion Smith. So they have a lot of options there. They have a good carousel of running backs and a good carousel of wide receivers and the king of spring in Luis Perez. So the Renegades are going to be a really good team this year. We'll go over the standings so far after this final game, which won't take long to talk about. This was one of the worst games I've ever seen. The San Antonio Brahmas are officially, in my opinion, the worst team in the UFL after 2 weeks. They lose to St. Louis in St. Louis, 9-26. This game was horrible. St. Louis had the ball for 35 minutes compared to San Antonio's 24. 9 total drives for each team. 50 plays for San Antonio, 57 for St. Louis. 223 yards for San Antonio, 319 for St. Louis. Honestly, we'll just look at the stats, dude. Kellen Mond was 13 of 27 for 129 yards and an interception. He had the QBR of 46.7. They don't give the ball to Anthony McFarland, who had 6 carries for 55 yards and 9.2 average. Hand it off. Hand it off to Anthony McFarland. And Deshaun Corbin had a nice game. 10 carries, 38 yards, and a touchdown. Kellen Mond it does not look like the answer, in my opinion. He misses throws. He doesn't feel pressure. He has no awareness. He's just like Anthony Brown. They both suck. They both look so pedestrian in this league, and it's crazy. It really is. Jontre Kirkland had 4 catches for 43 yards. But outside of that, I mean, their defense played okay, sort of, not really at all. Tavante Beckett and Darius Phillips and Jordan Mosley are the only guys I'm going to give any kind of credit. Everyone else looked really mid and just like they didn't give a shit. San Antonio looks like the worst team in the UFL. The St. Louis Battlehawks look like the best. Manny Wilkins, 12 of 16, 162 yards, 106 QBR. Manny Wilkins, 9 attempts on the ground, 58 yards. Jacob Sailors, 11 attempts on the ground, 46 yards, and 3 touchdowns for Jacob Sailors. Gary Jennings Jr., 1 catch, 58 yards. They really don't throw the ball that well or that much, but they run the ball like no one else in this league. So the Battlehawks really do look outstanding. They win 26-9. The Battlehawks and Renegades and Defenders are all 2-0. While the Brahmas, Roughnecks, and Showboats are 0-2, the Stallions and Panthers are both 1-1. Right now, in terms of conference, the Stallions have the lead in the USFL conference, and the Battlehawks have the lead in the XFL conference. Obviously, the Stallions and Panthers have a tied record. Same with the Battlehawks, Renegades, and Defenders. But yeah, it really does look like it's going to be a very gritty competition for the USFL conference title this year. And the XFL conference title, I feel like it's going to be St. Louis this year, or possibly Arlington. Both of those teams look really full sound and solid. Obviously, I want to get into my power rankings, my Week 3 power rankings. The Tee Time official Week 3 UFL power rankings for the 2025 season go as this. At number 1, we have the St. Louis Battlehawks. At number 2, we have the DC Defenders. At number 3, we have the Arlington Renegades. Number 4, we have the Birmingham Stallions. Number 5, we have the Michigan Panthers. At number 6, we have the Memphis Showboats. Number 7, we have the Houston Roughnecks. And number 8, the worst team in the UFL as of right now, in my personal opinion, is the San Antonio Brahmas. They have laid egg after egg, and they have the best defense after last. They had the best defense in the UFL last year, and it's fallen off a cliff. So we have a lot to kind of look forward to in terms of hopefully seeing some of these teams progress, seeing if they can, you know, develop and push through the adversity, or we'll see who the new bottom teams are this year. But it's been a really interesting first 2 weeks of the 2025 UFL season. A lot of stuff to kind of dive into and really appreciate as a whole in general. But I'll say my favorite play of the week, I got to say, man, that's really hard. Jacob Saylor's just had 3 really nice touchdowns. 2 of them were walk-ins. But I got to say that 54-yard throw from Matt Corral to Deion Kane to pretty much ice that game was pretty badass. I'll say that right now. That throw was pretty badass by Matt Corral. It's good to see that offense get vertical and then stretch the field a little bit. We want to see that out of some of these more electric offenses. And obviously, schemes are schemes, but you want to see those throws kind of being made whenever you're able, obviously. So, yeah, that pretty much wraps up the recap for the UFL's Week 2. It was a really good week of football to be able to enjoy on the weekend. You got to love it. You got to appreciate it. And hopefully Week 3 has some more excitement and some more shock and awe. I heard a report that the Stallions game is sold out. So that's very, very interesting to say the least. See if that that three-time champion fan base shows out for the team, you know? But the attendance records, a little less than 11,000 in Michigan at Ford Field. A little less than 12,000 at Audi Field. I think it was like 400 people at Arlington today. It was rough. It looks pathetic at Arlington. They need to really start marketing where the fucking headquarters of the league is at. And it was 32,000 in St. Louis. So really good crowds this week except Arlington. Really good to see that. Really awesome to see overall people go out there and support their team. So shout out to you if you were able to do so this weekend. Shout out to the UFL. Let's wait for let's get excited and hyped for Week 3 coming up this weekend. The Stallions obviously take on the Arlington Renegades, I believe. Let me pull up the schedule here. Yep, Friday, April 11th, the Arlington Renegades take on the Birmingham Stallions at 8 p.m. On April 11th. Like I said, on Fox, I have the Birmingham Stallions winning this game. I think it'll be a close game, though, a very entertaining one, to say the least. And then Saturday, April 12th, we have the Houston Roughnecks taking on the Memphis Showboats. I think the Showboats win this one and get their first win of the season. Sunday, April 13th, both these games are on ABC. The San Antonio Brahmas take on the Michigan Panthers at Ford Field at 12 at noon. I'm going to take the Panthers in this one. I think that they are just overall a better team and better coached team based off the first 2 weeks of the season. Going into the finale of Week 3, we have the DC Defenders traveling to St. Louis to battle the St. Louis Battlehawks. I think the DC Defenders take the first L of the season here, and the Battlehawks win this game in a close fashion, probably by a field goal or possibly a late turnover. I just think Jordan Te'amu misses way too many wide-open throws that could lead to touchdowns, and overall their pass attack is quite subpar, And their run game isn't even that good either. The only thing keeping DC at 2-0 right now is their defense being very electric and well coached by Greg Williams. So yeah, that pretty much gets our predictions and power rankings out of the way. Everyone out there, stay safe, stay awake, and enjoy some more UFL this year. Make sure you tune into some games or get down to the stadiums if you're in the local area. But thank you again for tuning in to Tee Time Reports. This is Trevor with Tee Time Reports. Stay safe, stay awake, and peace.